electric slide into the devil doors of life. Things are changing and it ain't the way I like. On the replay, wish I could get a replay. Don't mean to hold ya, but I wanna do over. Gas up the ship, shoot me a text and let me know when it is time. I wanna get off. One star would not recommend the needle fall from here. I wanna get off.
A music podcast for the culture. Wow, wow, wow.
Yo, what's up? What's up? What's up? We are in the house. This is Wild Bunch. We got me, Dame Wild. We got V-Ray, the human Swiss Army knife. Welcome, everybody, to the first episode of Wild Wild Thoughts, where we just going to, you know, talk about some music and some entertainment or whatever comes to mind. You know what I mean? Like, we going to talk about any and everything. But if there's something y'all want to talk about, hit us in the comments, too, and we'll hit that off as well. But as you can see in the ticker down there at the bottom, we got a few subjects that we're going to talk about. So I think, V-Ray, it's only fitting to start with Miss Carter.
Yeah,
And the Cowboy Carter album. Let's talk about it. Like, so for me, I love the album. I think it's incredible. I think she sounds amazing because it's a country album and the production is stripped down. She really got to go in vocally and... Hey, man, I think it's really, really dope. I think she's opening doors for a lot of other black country artists because there's a couple songs where she has, like, the up-and-coming black country artists on there with her. So she's giving them a light they probably never would have gotten without her, you know, putting them on the record. Not saying that they weren't doing their thing, but, you know, there's a difference between doing your thing and doing your thing on the Beyonce record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what's your thoughts? Did you get a chance to listen to it yet?
I listened to... Well, first off, I don't know, it's fucking 27 songs, right? So I listened to about 15 so far. And I know that the Beehive is probably going to come after me, man. But I love it as a Beyonce record. Let me qualify what I'm going to say. I like it as a Beyonce record. Material-wise and stuff, it stacks it's nicely. But I just wonder about the hanging the country banner on the album, man, because... I mean, out of the songs I heard so far, I think only two really strike me as, like, you know, Southern fried, like, country. I think that it's like a R&B album with some country topics more than it is like a true twangy, you know, country record. Like, I mean, I'm up on the modern country vibe, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But
I just don't know if she hit it. Because if you listen to, like, any other Beyonce album and listen to this one, it damn near sounds like the same production-wise. I mean, it to me, before I heard it and I heard all the hype about it, I expected it to be more, you know, sitars. I saw an interview with, what's dude's name we used to tour with, the sit down and plays a sitar?
Robert Johnson.
Huh?
Yeah, Robert, damn, I can't remember. I know you're talking about
him. So I saw him on the news talking about his participation in the album. He plays some real twangy, you know, southern sound of stuff. Want to hear the record? It's like there's a couple of joints on, like, club joints on there. You know what I'm saying? It don't sound like country shit kicker line dancing music to me. So that's my take on it. I like it, but as a Beyonce record, I'm not sure I like it as a country record, and I'm not sure it's even country. You know?
Well, I will say this. My homegirl Asha, she had a great way to put it. She said it's a Beyonce album with a country filter on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, like, it still, to me, it sounds like a country record, especially with the new contemporary country. And the instrumentation to me is country. The production, a lot of the production is country.
I'm not sure I agree with that, man. Like for instance, Jolene, that doesn't sound like, I mean, it doesn't, it's really sound reminiscent of the original. I mean, not that it should, but you know what I mean? Just production wise, it just sounds like it went somewhere else. Again, it sounds great as a Beyonce album because I always like the way she stacks those harmonies and they flip and they run together and everything's in harmony and all that. But I think it's overdone for the type of genre that it is. And I will say this too, in opening doors, you know what I'm saying for the real redneck country market that you would think. I mean, the Cinderella story is, you know, everybody resisted Beyonce at first, but then they couldn't deny the greatness of the record and they let her in, kind of shit, which is the way that doors get open for, you know, artists on their coattails. But I wonder if, you know, in the wrong hands, it'd be like, see there, goddamn it, I told you it wasn't no country record, and it like don't pan out to be.
I mean,
like,
I think they're gonna say, I think those rednecks like that gonna say that anyway.
Well, like, some of those stations are playing some of the modern black country artists. Like, what's those two chicks' name from, like, I don't know if it was America's Got Talent, or there's one big girl and one slim chick, and they sing and harmonize together and stuff like that, and they sing like country drinking songs and shit. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know you're talking about.
See, they made it on some radio platforms that they probably wouldn't have, and I don't know if they've been nominated for anything, but you know, that's kind of where I thought Beyonce was lane was gonna be. I mean, that's just my two cents, man.
Well, I listened, like I said, I've listened to the whole album maybe like four times now, because like I was on a plane ride, so I listened to it on the plane ride out, on the plane ride back. You know what I'm saying? And I think, you know, like Pandora said, it's not a straight country album, of course, which I didn't expect it to be a straight country album, but I think there's enough country songs on there to me to identify it as a country album. Like, there's enough country songs with the country elements blended with, because also you could tell, especially when you get to the end of the album, she was starting to blend it to go with Renaissance One, because apparently she recorded this album before the first album, so this one was actually supposed to be first. So you could tell when it starts going into some of the country house shit that it was going into the Renaissance, you know what I mean? It was because it's a three-act joint, it was going in the Renaissance. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think she is gonna open those doors. I think she is, like, I think on iTunes and Billboard she had like 6 out of the top 10 was her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then even on Billboard Country, she's charting as a country artist, not just on the pop side. So she's doing pop, R&B, and country with this
for
record.
Streams or for what? What are they counting there?
Well, for Billboard, like whatever they use for Billboard, you know what I mean? Which is probably radio play, streams, and radio ads and all that. And then for iTunes, it's how many your sales, like basically what you're selling. So when you got iTunes got their own Hot 100, whatever the hot stuff selling. Because if you go to the Hot 100, sometimes it's random people you never heard of, but they got a hot record out. So she had like 4 or 5 of her tunes was on the iTunes Hot, you know, iTunes top 10, which I thought was big. Because that's the people. That's not Billboard. That's the people.
But that's the beehive driving that, though. You know what I'm saying? It don't matter.
Not on country. Nah. Not. It she would have be. Been. Nah. She, how? She would have been on country.
iTunes sales? Like anybody.
Not iTunes. No. Billboard.
Oh.
Country.
Oh,
Billboard.
No, I'm talking about iTunes.
Yeah, no. I'm talking about Billboard country. Yeah. That ain't the beehive. That like,
No. I get that.
You have to have country ads to be on country, actual country stations to chart on Billboard.
Well, I hope I'm wrong, because it would be great if she does. And I think the attention is going to draw will still, you know, get some other black artists consideration. And then they have to stand on their own merit to, you know, actually get in. So I think in that regard, yes, it'll draw a bunch of attention. I just I don't know. I haven't listened to the whole album in all fairness, but, you know, I expected it to be nobody can tell her she can't, you know, insert herself in a genre and do that genre, you know, better than people that are doing it, kind of thing. But I was just like, that harmony sounds like, you know, put a ring on it and shit. You know what I'm saying? It sounds like the same kind of harmony principle and all that stuff. And it just didn't have that beer drinking vibe to it, to me. But I hope I'm wrong. Like I said, I'll listen to it a few more times and songs may grow on me that didn't give me that country appeal. So we'll see. But I mean, kudos to her. Nobody does it like Beyonce, so you can't be mad at her.
Yeah. Pandora said, I think I appreciate it for the musical, historical references and collabs. It's like she incorporated blues, jazz, zydeco, classical, R&B, and trap.
Yeah, the historical references, I completely agree with that. The collaborations, I agree with. I was caught off guard by what we did get out of it. But good point, Pandora.
Yeah. So we'll see, and I'm interested to see what the third act is going to be. Is it going to be a rock album or a gospel album? I think it's got to be one of the two.
I was going to be funny to see is not funny, but you know what I'm saying. How do you tour within the, you know, all those genre mixes at one time? That'll be interesting to see. Whether it was a Tupelo, Mississippi, or you know what I'm saying,
right?
DC, and try to get a crack at her. Does she change her show depending on which location she goes to, or how does that work?
Right.
Excuse me. And is she gonna be on the CMAs? And
she gotta be. Hey, she gotta be. And that's where you're gonna see.
Yeah.
That's where you're gonna see her piss people off is when she starts getting into those spaces like that, like CMAs and stuff like that. Like that's when you're gonna see things become an issue.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. That's gonna be like the Black Mermaid, you know, rebellion and shit. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Hey, Pandora, when I heard that, like to open the album and to end it with that, I thought I agree with you. I did hear some Freddie Mercury in those crazy ass harmonies she was doing, even the the way she was singing, like the vocal gymnastics she was doing. And that's why I said, like, I appreciate this album because Renaissance was dope for what it was, but I felt like there's only like a few songs she could get off on vocally.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like on this album, she really had a chance to get off vocally and really had a chance to like do some things you can't usually do in R&B, harmony wise and instrumentation wise. You know what I mean? Like you said, like using the dobro guitar and using those rhythms, like even the Jolene, like how you said the production is different, but that rhythm is real, like Pandora says, real Zydeco rhythm.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like she couldn't get away with that in the on the R&B side of things. So I think she was able to explore and mash up things in a really dope way. And I thought it was a really creative album too. And that's one of the things I was most excited about because I've been hearing so many new albums that I look forward to. And even if I think they're good production wise, a lot of times I don't feel like there's a lot of creativity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I know, hey, James, hey, Cole, I know you said people was skeptical of Darius Rucker. I know he probably sitting there like, I've been doing this. He probably sitting there like, I've been the black country dude.
Yeah. Like that meme of Milli Vanilli sitting back watching everybody lip sync to their song. He's that dude right now. That'll be the new meme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her vocal, let me see. Pandora said her vocal agility is pretty something. No, like I said, I felt like she got to stretch out on this one. And if you listen, if y'all give it another listen, listen this time with the ear of like just like focusing on what she's doing vocally. Because Beyonce is one thing I say I feel like she always was good at is making something very difficult sound easy. So a lot of people are like, oh, she can't sing. But if you know, like from a technical standpoint, you know what I'm saying? Like a technical standpoint, you'd be like, oh no, she's really doing some crazy stuff technically, you know. But she makes it sound so easy, like she does it so effortlessly. I think a lot of people don't catch it. On a technical end, Tweet said, name something and give an example of an album you think is better creatively. Better than Beyonce's album creatively right now? Like something new? Nothing. To me, in my opinion. Like something like a new album that was creative like that. I don't think nothing new has done like that, but I guess in the past couple years, Panic at the Disco put out a record a couple years back, like their last album that they toured on. The Panic at the Disco album I thought was very creative because it does have notes of Freddie Mercury. It does have notes of like that old rock. It got notes of, besides Queen, they have like bits of Muse in there. So I would say maybe the Panic at the Disco album and the last couple Muse albums I felt like were really, really creative. But on the R&B side, creative-wise, I will say the Drake Certified Lover Boy album, I was thoroughly impressed with that album.
Yeah.
The Certified Lover Boy was super creative, and the Kendrick Lamar Big Steppers and Mr. Morale. That album was crazy creative to me from a hip hop standpoint of not only the subject matter he was talking about, but also the risks he took on the production side. So like some stuff is not like melodic. It's a little angry and it feels angry, but I think it was on purpose. So those are creative, but as far as like somebody vocally, I don't think nobody really close. Stephanie said, I also think her natural vibrato allows her a wider range with her vocal skills. Yeah, she kind of had a thing that, and before y'all get all up in arms, I'm not saying she sounds like Michael Jackson, but she has that thing that Michael had, where he had a certain timber in his voice. So when he does his harmonies, they kind of like interlock like this. He had it, Freddie Mercury had it, and I think Beyonce has it. Like where they doubled is so close and so good, that shit reverberates, it vibrates a different way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it vibrates. It's not a lot of people I know who have that, but.
And stacking harmonies.
Yeah, like in stacking harmonies. So yeah. You stack and it's like so crazy perfect that you like, did she double it? But it's like, it almost like it phases. Like the harmonies are so close, they phase. So I know, like I said, Freddie Mercury, MJ, and I think Beyonce has that as well. And I think that's one of the things that sets her apart too. And they all, the people I named, they all have this kind of different vibrato that nobody else has. Like there's no other MJ vibrato. MJ had it. There's no other Freddie Mercury vibrato. Freddie had it.
Yeah.
And Beyonce has the same thing. Like the speed of her vibrato is a little different. So, you know, I do think that lends to her being able to do, you know, some dope things with her style.
Right.
All right. So, you know, not to beat the Cowboy Carter horse all night. I could talk about that album all night, but Kendrick woke up and chose violence.
Yeah, gasoline and matches violence.
Kendrick woke up and chose violence. I listened to, first of all, for everybody who don't know what's happening on the hip hop side, there was a song called First Person Shooter with Drake and J. Cole. And in J. Cole's verse, he says something about everybody trying to figure out who's the best, basically. And it's got to be the big three, J, Drake, and me. You know, Kendrick, Drake, and me, saying like we the big three. If any of us the GOAT, it's one of the three of us. And Kendrick, I think he was either pissed he didn't get invited on the song. And he hopped up and said, mother F the big three, it's just big me. Boom.
Yeah, and he murdered on the pen too, bro.
Hey, and I love it for hip hop at this moment because I feel like everybody was too buddy buddy. It was getting too stale, you know what I mean? And I think Kendrick probably was like, I'm just about to shake something up because that's what it felt like. It felt like he woke up like, you know what? Hip hop need a shot in the arm, and I'm gonna do it, and I'm just the one to do it because he did it a few years ago in Control. Remember, he let everybody have it, and nobody. Nobody came back and said nothing.
Yeah.
We got one more comment on the Beyonce. Let me read this off from Pandora. People underestimate her vocal training. People think that she just picked up a mic and started singing and got lucky. One of her vocal trainers in her early career was an opera singer. Yeah, I think because like I hear people all the time say, Beyonce can't sing. I think you should say you don't like her voice.
Yeah.
Say you don't like her. To say she can't sing, that's a different conversation altogether. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not a fan of her voice. I could take that, but to be like, oh no, she can't sing. Like,
That,
you know what I mean? Cause like, yeah. Pandora said, Kendrick, go to this generation. To me, easily by far, K Dot is the go to this generation, man. And I feel like, and it's crazy because he's not new. K-Dot been around for what, 13 years now?
Maybe. Yeah, he's been around a while before he was heralded, like with those underground tapes and stuff like that. That was a few years before he actually cracked.
Yeah, like yeah. But even after I'm talking about his first album. What year did Good Kid come out?
Oh shit, I don't know.
Let me look it up real quick. Good Kid. I'm sure it's gonna trip you out. Whatever year came out. Yep, 2012.
Oh, yeah. Well, damn. Yeah, 12 years.
Yeah, 12 years. So he's been like top of his game for 12 years. I don't think he dropped a bad album yet, in my opinion. I think he has some albums that were better than the others, but I don't think he dropped no bricks, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
And speaking of creative albums, is that the album that Oh Boy, the six string bass player produced? What's his name? The dude that wears all the weird, crazy clothes and shit like that.
Battlecat.
Yeah, is it Battlecat?
Not Battlecat. Thundercat.
No. Yeah, Thundercat. Is that the album that he produced?
I don't know. No, I think he did the
with the heavy jazz influence.
Yeah, he worked on that. Was to Pimp a Butterfly.
Yeah, Pimp a Butterfly. That was a very creative record, man, from a music structure standpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think Kendrick came with that Cat Williams fire for hip hop, the way Cat Williams shook up a comedy for a minute. And shit.
Basically, the Cat Williams verse.
Yeah, he did a Cat Williams drop and fucked the game up because people see them at the top of the game. You know what I mean? J. Cole, you know what I mean? As some of the more influential rappers that I ain't talking about dropping Molly and, you know, drinking lean and shit, you know. So he came for the top of the game and stood on their shoulders and pissed and peed on them.
As they say, he was standing on business. Pandora said, because Drake's starting to get that Nicki Minaj thing where he feels no one can compete with him because he's popular and mainstream. He for sure, you could tell too. You could tell he for sure. But you know what? Like I said, I love Certified Lover Boy. I thought that was a really dope album. I didn't really like the 21 Savage, the album with him and 21 Savage.
That was trash. No.
I felt like that was him trying to attach himself to some young shit. And I'm like, I feel like he didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he didn't need to do that. But Certified Lover Boy, I thought was dope. I thought it was really creative. He even had, to me, on that album, he had the younger dudes trying to do what he was doing.
Right.
You know, like he had the younger artists on there, but they was kind of like coming up to his level and doing what he was doing on that 21 Savage album. I feel like he was really phoning it in, probably because he was with 21.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wasn't being pushed. And then I just felt like he was trying to like jump on to some young shit. Yeah. Oh, you know what? I want to talk about, huh?
I was just gonna say I wasn't crazy about the production on the 21 Savage record either. The beats that they chose to be the ones to make the album, it was like,
yeah, it sounded like some real like my first album shit. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it had that vibe to it. Like, is this the record? Like, these are the ones that made it. I can't imagine what
didn't make the album.
Yeah, like, damn, man. Riding in my car, I'm in a bad mood. Using my car as the spot for, you know what I'm saying? I'm rolling. I got the music pumping and 21 Savage and them come on. It's like, y'all messed up my day, man.
Yeah, I was looking forward to the album. And then I heard it. I was like, especially because I'm like, after Certified Lover Boy, I'm like, oh, he about to follow with some heat.
Yeah.
And no.
Well, I'm not sure I'm a great fan of the artists teaming up like they do like of late, you know, anyway, because sometimes it doesn't have that same kind of level. Like when you heard Kanye and Jay-Z was going to do a record together, you know what I'm saying? It was like, oh shit, that's about to be like dynamite. But now these
everybody can't watch the throne. Everybody cannot watch the throne. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and if you are, like you said, if you are going to do that, it needs to be an event. I feel like they'd be doing this on some, like on the side, like in between my eyes, we just going to jump and do this on the side. That's what it felt like to me. I feel like Watch the Throne, they was like, we coming for people next. Even Jay-Z and R. Kelly back in the day.
Yeah.
Both worlds. Yeah. Like, I think it was that same thing. Like, it kind of was the event. Them at the top of their game. Them pushing each other. And I feel like the 21 Savage Drake album wasn't that. And like you said, as of late, like, I don't feel like it's that. Like, and I heard there was supposed to be a J. Cole. I probably ain't gonna happen now. I heard J. Cole Kendrick album.
But see, it could still be that, because this, when you, sometimes I wonder if they make the controversy just so they can make, you
for
know,
sure. For sure.
Drive the album as the peace treaty that you know brings it back full circle. So, and that's very true, what Stephanie's saying right now.
Chemistry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, chemistry. She said chemistry is everything, and it seems like the collaboration choices are based on popularity as opposed to compatibility. That's a hundred. I agree with you.
And their business decisions too. You know what I mean? So sometimes that those pairings are like shotgun weddings. You know, sometimes they should just be a track on one of the artist's album, or not whole albums of that concept, because it just doesn't work in on. You know, 15 songs in a row and shit, you know?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, it's something that I didn't have on the list that I just thought about that I want to talk about. Kanye West said feels like he's responsible for like all the genres of hip hop for the last 20 years. Like every sound. He like every sound, everybody sound, he's responsible.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Kanye's ego probably believes that for real, or you know what I'm saying, and God knows he doesn't have a filter between his mouth and his brain, so I'm not surprised that he would say something like that. But dude, I mean, it's so much creativity, just like when he showed up to the game. You know, people show up and they do something innovative and it's theirs, and you know, you can give a shout out to the people that came before you, but you know the people come before you can't just take credit for your whole vibe and you know everything that's been done since you showed up. What about the shitty music? Are you responsible for that too? You know,
right?
So you've got to be careful with verbiage like that, you know.
DeMond said he's sick, he had influence, yes, but not fully responsible. Well, yeah. So just to get into the weeds a little bit too, even if he feels like he's fully responsible, because a lot of the music he was talking about that was like super game changing was very collaborative, and it wasn't just him. Because if that's the case, I would say really a lot of that, especially like the 808s and Heartbreaks, that was Kid Cudi.
Yeah.
Like he literally took Kid Cudi's sound and probably beefed it up and put the Kanye on it, kind of like, you know what I'm saying? Like Dr. Dre and Daz. But you pretty much took Cudi's sound for like the 808 and Heartbreaks album. Like because before that, I feel like Graduation was him, but it was highly influenced by Cameron, Jay-Z, and what's the other producer that was making beats like Kanye? Just Blaze.
Yeah.
So like even that era, like Just Blaze was kind of before you, bro. And you sounded like mini Just Blaze when you first dropped. And then when you switched it up, went to the 808 and Heartbreaks, a lot of that was Cudi.
I think he even said in an interview that he shouted out Cudi that he basically shoplifted his sound.
Yeah, he did. That's why I say, so it's funny to come back and say, like, I'm responsible for all this. I'm like, but you're not even responsible for your own shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you shoplifted Kid Cudi's whole steez. And then after that, like, even now, his new album, Vultures, it really sound like a Ty Dolla $ign album featuring Kanye.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, no, how can you say that when you got to latch on to other people to even create that sound?
Does he ever talk about who his influences are of his?
Who, Kanye?
Yeah, I've never heard.
Not really. You know, he like the last 10 years, he's saying it's him. It's all him. He's Walt Disney in his mind. That's what he said. He's Walt Disney. He's the creator of all of it. He ain't influenced by nobody. He's the influencer. That's what he said.
Yeah,
but like I said, every album you could kind of point to who he was kicking it with, who he was hanging around with, and go listen to their album before Kanye, and then listen to Kanye's album after he was kicking it with them, kind of like Cudi.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like
absorb. Yeah,
and he was trying to take credit for the auto-tune era. I'm like, you can't take that away from T-Pain.
Yeah,
like you can't take that from T-Pain. T-Pain, yeah, but you know what I mean? So I kind of had a bone to pick. And some sad news to me. She said, I truly believe Kanye has NPD. What's that, Miss Psychiatrist? She's using these clinical terms, using big words. I'm going to take that as a sign of disrespect.
And we're waiting too to find out what it
like
means,
what's right? NPD.
I'm like googling it with one hand on the side.
But narcissistic personality disorder. I don't think I can disagree with that.
Yeah.
Narcissistic personality disorder.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing that Chad and Pharrell is beefing, and it makes me sad because they're fighting over the what up, Jorge? That they're fighting over the Neptune's name. Now, I feel like, why fight over the Neptune's name? Because Pharrell, you got your own name on your own anyway. You don't need the Neptune's name even for your production stuff. Pharrell had his own slew of production stuff on the side. So I feel like, to me, it feels like then the only person who really gets hurt by the name getting snatched is Chad.
Well, maybe that's the point.
That's whack, man.
Yeah, that is terrible.
Like, what's the world coming to? Chad and Pharrell beefing, Hall & Oates is beefing.
The Fat Boys broke up and shit.
Like, how Hall & Oates still beefing? Like, it's 2024, Hall & Oates. Get it together, guys.
Yeah. But you know, the Hall & Oates thing, that was, I don't know. Actually, when you brought that up, we were talking about, talking yesterday about Pharrell and that whole thing. I didn't even know that that was a thing right now. But I know that the Hall & Oates thing was like, one of the dudes wanted to sell part of the catalog, a part of the name or something like that. And the person that, and I guess the, what's the dude, the one that the lead singer dude was opposed to that because he was still using the name for business. So that, I wonder if that's different from just Pharrell and Chad just, you know, yelling at each other in high falsetto voices and shit, arguing over the name. You know what I mean? Like, is it a personal thing or is it business or like, what's
I know Pusha T, who's cool with both of them.
Yeah.
He hopped on a post and said, this ain't about Pharrell and Chad. This is about a lawyer trying to drain Chad's pockets.
Mm.
So I don't know. I wish I could get more, you know, I wish you would have gave us a little more insight.
Yeah.
Pandora said, man, I would love to see John and Daryl back together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, with the economy and business the way they are, don't be surprised if they have a damn residency in Vegas or something. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Where the economy drives them back together.
Speaking of residencies in Vegas, let me ask the audience, man. Like, let me ask the audience. There's talk that there's going to be some hologram tours stopping, you know, for residencies in Vegas. They're talking about doing a Michael Jackson hologram show in Vegas, Whitney Houston hologram show. I know ABBA is actually doing a whole hologram tour for their new album. They recorded a new album, but they like, we 70 something years old, so excuse me, they like, film us on this green screen, make us young again. Like, I saw the whole video. I like, it's kind of crazy too. And you know, since the Tupac hologram, the technology has gotten like 10 times better.
Yeah, AI is going nuts.
So I'm asking the audience, I ask you guys watching, what do you think about that? Would you go pay to see a hologram show? And would it feel weird if it's an artist who's not alive? Like, you know what I mean? Like, would that make a difference if it's an artist who's alive? Because they just like, I could be in more than one place at once. Because I know they had this new technology too, where you can actually, I saw it, they got in a little box, but you could be like at home and they broadcast your hologram, but it's really you, into a bunch of stadiums around the world where you're doing a concert.
Or theaters. They do that in theaters a lot too.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have the seating capacity, but Pandora said, nah.
I don't want no hologram, nothing. I think a hologram NJ would creep me out. I wouldn't see it if I'm going to be charged the same price if the person was actually there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a whole concert, I think it would feel weird to me. Me personally, like, I don't know, because I almost feel like, because we're talking about the AI stuff, it almost feels like stealing somebody's essence, even if you got permission. You know what I mean? Like, it just really feels like, I don't know, man. It's something about stealing somebody's soul to project it onto the stage that just don't sit right with me.
But then too, when a company, and most likely a label, owns that imagery and all the rights to it in perpetuity and all that stuff like that, they can start making the artists do whatever the hell they want to do. First off, they can release new music, which they can use AI to produce music that sounds like the artist A. But in the imagery itself, who's to say, no, you can't have Tupac do that? Like, if they had Tupac come out, pull his pants down and move the audience, you know what I'm saying, in the middle of the show, like, who's going to say, oh, hell no, nah, man, you can't do that with Tupac's image? And the company can say, well, we own it. We can, you know, we can do what the hell we want to do with it, or have Public Enemy come out and Ku Klux Klan robes or something. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, once you control the narrative, I mean, it's kind of like controlling the narrative about the audience. And when that person's, that kind of technology extends beyond the early fans that might, you know, die off, and they still keep the artist's image and reputation going, you know, the people that would be around to say that, you know, Tupac would never have done that. You know, now it's like 2057 and we're all dead. And you know what I'm saying? The image has been just taken to a whole other level that was never the artist, and something that the artist didn't stand for. So I wonder how they control that, or who controls that, because when it gets to that point, like, does the dead artist estate, like Whitney Houston's estate, get a say in what they do with her image? Right. You know, right. Or I wonder how that, what the legal side of that would be when that happens.
Yeah, and that's what I feel like. I think it opens the door for too many like tricky ethical issues. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, and the fact that you can hijack somebody's vocal likeness, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because of AI, so you can literally make a trash new song.
And make them like, say anything that you want to say, like, vote it's for Trump, tricky. Like, what? Yeah. You
know what like, Whitney Houston singing vote for Trump.
Right.
Yeah, right. No, it's scary. Stephanie said, now I can understand it being used in the sense like ABBA was saying, if there is some type of health reason or why you can't physically perform and that's an option that fans are okay with, then use it. But as far as people who have gone on, let them rest in peace. Let them be what it was.
In ABBA's case, they are around to approve or you know, decline on stuff. So
right, because like I said, I watched the video, so you see them talking about, you know, how they wanted to go. They put basically they MD their whole show, and they actually sung all the stuff, like they re-sang everything live and built it around like a live performance. And then like you said, you know, we can't really get around like that no more. So
yeah,
you know.
And see, like, see, Celine Dion might be another candidate for that, since she has like health issues right now, but she's still alive to like approve something or have at least partial approval handed off to her estate, so people can look out for things on her behalf. But yeah, for dead artists, that's a tough one, because like a Prince, you know, it seems that whoever's in charge of his estate is kind of like taking some liberties, because there's music that he never would have released, or you know, licenses he never would have approved of.
100%. Right,
so if they try to do a live hologram show of Prince, there may be things that he would have never engaged in, you know. So yeah, that's a tricky situation, man. And this, what's crazy is it's so inevitable that there's got to be legislation and all these things that it gets wrapped in ultimately, because there's no way it's not happening, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I think that's, and I think it's gonna, as it evolves, I think it's gonna start to present all those issues and then some that we're talking about.
You know, another thing that impacts that whole thing is the touring musician, like the band that would normally have been on tour with a hologram artist. If you got a hologram band, everybody's fired. So
there's
nothing to do but pipe in all artificially generated images, music, vocals, people. You know, you'll never hear feedback at a show again, you know, on the mic or none of that stuff. It's all perfect now, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. I think it's going to open the Pandora's gates definitely to a whole bunch of different stuff, man.
Well, we got to do another podcast just talking about what alternatives are artists going to be faced with, you know, when this kicks in, like how artists still going to make money and that kind of thing. That would be a good topic to like have a whole bunch of musicians jump on and see what the consensus is or the thoughts, you know.
Yeah. It's gonna be real interesting. All right, now let's talk about the white boy versus everybody. Why all of a sudden everybody got beef with Eminem?
Yeah. That's, you know, I'm the conspiracy theorist, so you know, I know that Dre already leaked that Eminem got a new record coming this year. So I was saying this last night that I wonder if some of these beefs are either A, to like set the stage to promote, you know, get his name back out there in preparation for the drop, or if people know his record's coming and they're trying to like get on his coattails now, so when, you know, they can try to like politic for their own purposes, you know what I'm saying, by trying to go after somebody that's coming or something like that. But it's crazy. Like Lord Jamar, I was talking about, dude, and apparently this is a new, Corey said it's been like 2 years that old boy been saying crazy stuff.
More than 2 years.
Yeah, but he said some wild shit about like he can't rap and he's not a good writer and his delivery is trash and like all the things that he's known for, the things that, you know, if you could say I didn't like this album and stuff like that, okay, that may be one thing. But to say, like you said, people say about Beyonce, to say he can't rap is
right.
Like,
that's a different thing.
Is you know, is that real or not? Because I mean, that's the one thing nobody can deny. The dude can rap. He's crazy with the pen and all that. So it's like, I don't know what his motivation is, except he just decided to dislike Eminem.
It was like Lord Jamar, Melly Mel.
Yeah.
With the worst.
Oh, man, too bad you can't play that Melly Mel joint.
The worst diss song of all time.
Oh, my God. The Eminem didn't even have to answer because he basically dissed himself by even making the record. You know what I'm saying? It's like, nah, you know, never mind. You go ahead. Play
he
that
dissed
again.
Him like it was 1981, though. Like he dissed him like it was 1981. He was like, yeah, using outdated references. You look like Rod Herman. On Good Times. Like,
yeah. They do. The people who, no hip hop fan.
But you're right. He literally did say you look like Pee Wee Herman. I'm like, you pulled out a 1990 reference to diss Eminem.
Also, Pee Wee Herman is dead on top of everything else. Like, he can at least have some insults that are of people that are alive, even if they're from years ago. Like, why pick a dead dude? Like, people have to go Google the reference. They're like, oh, okay, I get what he meant. But that is an insult. It's like, if people have to get, your disc record has to come with like an owner's manual, you know what I'm saying, to look up in the index what you mean. It's like, right. You failed. You didn't get the task, bro. You didn't. You missed the assignment big time.
Pandora, I think I agree with you. I think M falls in and out of my top five, depending on how I feel that day, but he's never out of the top 10. You know what I mean? Like it's like same thing I said about Beyonce. Even if you don't like Eminem's subject matter, if you don't like his songs, like to say that he can't rap is kind of patently false. To say that he got whack delivery, when some of the records I've heard that I just was like holding my head, like Jesus Christ, like some of the rhythms that he used, some of the rhyme cadences, like nah, man, you can't say M can't.
And rap. The pen alone. I mean,
the pen is even the when he's talking about the crazy shit, how creatively he talks about the crazy stuff is like, you know what I mean? Like even how he does that is like, oh, that's crazy. Like, I would have never thought to put them words together like that. Like, I always tell people, every time somebody tell me that Eminem can't rap, I say, just go listen to My Dad's Going Crazy. Out of all, like, because there's a ton of songs, but to me, that's the one where I was like, I seen him display his funny side, his lyrical side.
Yeah.
I seen him display that rhythmic side where he was switching rhythms in mid-sentence, switching cadences. Like, that song, to me, touches on all parts of M. Because you get him every, and it's a great record. And he wrote All About Dre, the whole song.
Yeah.
Like, he wrote Forgot About Dre, that whole joint. He wrote that whole joint.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Come on, man.
But I was a huge fan of his storytelling. Like, when the first, first couple of records came out, just the way he weaved the story and even Stan, you know, songs like that, like
incredible storytelling songs. Incredible storytelling.
Like, yeah, yeah.
But even to take it all the way back, I remember when I first heard Hi, My Name Is, because I had never heard a hip hop record that sounds like that. Like,
yeah.
Hi, kids. When he first starts, it's not like he's not even rapping. Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because now, like, the new, right, Steph, she said very, very few MCs has lyrical schematics like M. Very few.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's like M, Biggie got that switch rhythms.
Yeah,
Method can do it, but to me, not as good. And Method is one of my favorites, but not as good as those guys. You know what I mean? It's not a lot of guys who have that thing where they could literally like end on one word and rhyme something with another word in the middle of the other sentence. Like, like she said, the thematics and the swing of what he can do is crazy.
Yeah.
And because, like, I think Benzino just dissed him. Like, did it?
Yeah.
And then he was crying on Dream Champs. Like, I love him. I'm like, what's wrong with these dudes, man?
Yeah. Well, hip hop has gone to a very emotional level of late, you know what I mean? Yeah. Without putting too much on it, you know, they really in their feelings with a lot of these new records. And you know what I'm saying? And it all started with skinny jeans, man. I think that's what
that was the beginning.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the end for hip hop. But I don't know, man. They're picking the wrong targets. Like, if you're trying to diss and come out on top and win, you know, you got to pick a fight with somebody else. All you got to do is listen to Renegade, the verse on Renegade, and you'd be like, you know what? I really like Eminem. I'm not fucking with him. And I'm gonna pick Lil Uzi Vert and go after him. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Somebody you can beat up. You know, don't go after like Eminem, who if they wanted to, could destroy you. Or it's even more of a diss for them not to even be bothered with you. You know, with what you say and do. So it's like, pick your battles, bro.
Like he made Machine Gun Kelly turn into a rock star.
Yeah,
see, Machine Gun Kelly start wearing sheer shirts and nail polish after Eminem got through with him. Yeah. I'm not hip hop no more.
So, you know, I don't know. You're right. There is something wrong with it. I think it's coming around though. But
well, because there's a new thing like where people have been saying like you watch different music hip hop podcasts. You know, like I said, I watch a lot of hip hop podcasts, and they saying something like, you know, don't nobody be playing Eminem records, or you don't hear Eminem in the club. I'm like, well, we never heard M in the club. Like, that was never his wheelhouse. And I was like, and I think more black people play Eminem records than y'all are giving credit for. You know what I mean? And also, Eminem is an MC's MC, and you got to be in the mood for his music too. Because you're not always in the mood to hear him talking that crazy stuff, right?
But
I don't think people, you don't get that big in hip hop. I don't care because they're trying to say it's only white people that buy his records. Like, no, you don't get that big in hip hop and sustain and stay without black folks.
Yeah.
You don't get to stay here without black folks. You just don't. I don't care how big of, as Vanilla Ice, I don't care how big of a pop rap star you are. You don't get to stay in that place without being embraced by black folks and being embraced by the black industry.
Yeah.
And like just the dude that bought y'all 50 Cent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And he maintains, like you say, in and he maintains a place in and out of the people's like top five conversations and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? He's not a throwaway MC, and there's some great ones that aren't throwaways that never get brought up in like a top five type thing. So that sustainability, man, it speaks volumes, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah, so I don't know. Like I said, like, I don't know. I don't know what the impetus was of everybody just deciding that, oh, we don't like Eminem no more. It was weird. Yeah. It was really weird. Like, it kind of came out of nowhere, and everybody kind of start jumping on it. It's like, you know, it's one of them weird social experiments. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like suicide to me. It's like, cut a hole in your parachute and then jump out of a plane. And shit. Like, why would you do it, A, and what do you think the outcome is going to be?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I will say I'm looking forward to this new record because it's a Dre and Eminem collaboration. So, you know, that's always been a winning combination. And I know M does a lot more production of his own now, which on a side note, I'm not a humongous fan of some of his own production.
Yeah, me neither.
But Dre will probably be doing some doozies, bro.
And also I heard that after 30 years, Dre and Snoop are doing another album together as well. Yeah, I feel like Snoop needs that if you want to get back on the map musically in a real way.
Yeah.
Something, I think he needs a Snoop and Dre album like that. Certain people just, you know, got chemistry that can't be beat. Quincy, Michael, Snoop, Dre.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just certain people, they magic.
Although Snoop's last record, I really liked the one after he bought Death Row and he dropped
that was a dope record. That was a really dope record, but it almost felt like a compilation too. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like, but I want a Snoop Death Row record. You know what I mean? And see how they bring it around at the age of 50. You know what I mean?
Wonder if it'll be an Aftermath or Death Row. That'll be interesting to see too, because you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I agree that chemistry is you can't beat it. And then who else? And him and Marsha Ambrosius.
Yeah,
that record coming out. You heard the single that they
no, I didn't hear the single. No, dope. I know it's dope because her last two albums to me were really dope, and she's been underrated, man. Like, because she did an album that Focus had a bunch of joints on. Shout out to Folk that I thought was incredible. There's a record she has. If y'all get a chance, go listen to the album. She has a song with Busta Rhymes on it. It's her and Busta Rhymes, and they both go crazy on that record.
It's
like a mid-tempo, and it almost feels like a Dre record. It's crazy. Stephanie said, I remember back there was a time when nobody come up against M and Fear getting torn apart. I know, man. Like I said, it's like this new generation, they got people getting out of bounds, man. Like,
yeah, that's what it is.
I knew stuff was going south when and this was years ago, but I remember I was like, this is the moment where you see that change, where one of the biggest hip hop artists at the time was like, I don't like Biggie whack. And I was like, uh-oh. You know what I mean? And I was like, and he didn't get a lot of pushback because everybody like, well, he the new generation. And I was like, this is the first time I heard that, because every other time it was the newer artists always praising behind, like Method Man them talking about Before and Him, and then Run DMC, you know what I mean? Like, and then he was getting like Run DMC corny, and people jumping on that band. I'm like, we forgetting where we came from. That's where, you know what I mean? Like,
I was just gonna say, it reminds me of like when, for anybody who has sons out there, your teenage son, when he come of age and start like trying to say flip shit to you, and shit, like, that's the rappers that are coming along, you know, with the established.
Yeah.
Eminem's no good, or Biggie? Yeah. You mean Biggie from New York, Biggie? Like, you know, you've really spoken out of turn now, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy. But I do think that the hip hop audience is kind of maturing now, you know what I mean? And I think they are looking for more out of these artists. Well, I'll say that because I was hearing some feedback on one of these podcasts where they were talking about the fans are getting sick of going to these shows and the hip hop artists don't know how to perform. You know what I'm saying? They just walk around the stage.
And they charging. They charging.
And they got their rapping over their vocal versions of their songs and stuff. You know what I mean? So somebody that has like a live band is like, oh shit, what's that thing called that guy's on? That's called a bass guitar. That's a throwback. You know what I'm saying? They're like, it's like a whole new thing. Like, they got this new thing where a band plays and then they rap over the band. It's like, yeah, that's new. That's dope. But I think that you know how shit goes full circle. Sorry about that. And the old becomes the new again. And I think that at least from a performance standpoint, that expectation is starting to emerge where people are complaining about, you know, paying all this money to see these people that don't really know how to give a show. So I think maybe if the bar gets raised in that capacity, it may be that, you know, more lyrical content or more, you know, less guns and killing each other and I got your girlfriend kind of music, you know, is replaced with something that's a little more at least ethical. It don't have to be like message music or nothing like that, but you know what I'm saying? I see that there may be a trend or the tide may be shifting as far as that's concerned. We'll see, but
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, for sure.
I'd be happy.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And while we got y'all here, again, everybody who's watching, please follow us on all our socials. Follow us at Wild Bunch on our Instagram, our Twitch. We just started our Twitch, so follow us on our Twitch, our YouTube, TikTok, everything. Oh, this is a great question. Whatever happened to artist development? Stephanie, I actually have an answer for you on that, because I was in the middle of the record labels when I saw the shift. V-Ray, you was there too.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna take y'all down the road of what happened to artist development. Up until about 2004, 2005, artist development was a major part of not only getting a record deal, but maintaining the record deal. Like, you got in, they got you, if you was a singer, they got you with a vocal coach, they got you with a fitness trainer, they got you with a nutritionist, and they put you in like basically like a 3-month boot camp before it was time for your album to come out, right? Like, that was like standard operating procedure.
Media training.
If you're a rapper, they got you with media training, they got you even with stage coaches, like what's her name? My girl, the crazy one who used to be with Diddy all the time. I know her. I'm looking at her face. Anyway, she was working with everybody. Like, she was teaching rappers how to perform. Like, it was like really a thing. And at this time, if you would, we would fly to New York and we would go to Def Jam. And when I say you walk into a building and you want to see a label that was like the epitome of hip hop. Like, the building was alive. Like, you walk into Def Jam, every cubicle had interns just playing music, blasting hip hop, listening to demos, hella loud. You could walk in one day, you'll see Redman smoking out somebody in the cubicle, smoking out somebody's personal assistant. You go to the back, Kevin Lyles is having Bellini Friday, so everybody drinking Bellinis, and literally in the middle of a meeting, he's getting a haircut. Like, it was hip hop. Like, it was like, it was the culture. And one of my good friends, shout out to Billy Clark, because he was the one who used to always get us in the building. We go out there and Billy be like, man, when y'all get out here, just come through and just hang out in the office. And we ended up getting a lot of work like that. We just be hanging in the office. And they be like, we need a beat for PD Pablo. Woo, woo, woo. And he be like, oh, my boys here, they got a beat. And then we'll literally go into the studio that night because we was just hanging out in the Def Jam building. So this was how it was, right? Just to paint the picture for you. Then I went to Def Jam maybe like 2 years later, 2007, 2008, like right after Soulja Boy dropped, and a couple of other artists that they found on the internet, right? I get there, it's quiet. There's nobody playing music loud. There's nobody smoking. Everybody looks sad. It's hella corporate. You got to give like your license and stuff now to get in. They had to make a copy of your license before you could even get in. And I was like, what the hell? And all my boys who worked there, that same happiness, they like, I got to get up out of here, right? Now everybody was on their computers looking for artists across the country who just had regional radio play. So they was just looking for numbers now. They weren't listening to demos no more. They said, we don't even get to listen to demos. You know what I'm saying? They were like, we got to look at who got the most spins and the most radio play in this city, and we got to go sign them. So they would sign them. Never had it wasn't LeRae. They would sign them, get the record since it was hot on the radio, and go straight to radio without prepping them anything. Like, one day when I have some time on this podcast, I'm going to tell y'all a story, because we actually worked with one of those artists who had like a radio hit, and they threw us in the studio with her without the label. The label never heard her. The A&R had never heard her sing live until she sat in the studio with us after her deal was done, and it was disastrous. But this lady had a hit record, so they had to, like, you know what I'm saying, they had to like chase something.
Yeah.
So that's what happened, Steph. That's what changed artist development, and went from really people listening to music, using their ear, using their instincts, using that gut, because that's where all the greatest music came from, right? Was people like, I got a gut feeling about this, to literally like, oh, yeah, they got some play in their little they got some play in their neighborhood, they got some play in their region, let's go sign it and let's drop it, make it bigger. And that's you know, this is like the Chingy era. Chingy was like one of those artists, the chicks who had that song, she got put out because she had a big record in New York that was pumping. What up, Rex? What's up? You got on just in time. So pretty much, she said pretty much the labels got lazy. Yeah, like they changed their formula. Like,
yeah, they killed a lot of overhead by doing that, but it killed the soul of the labels too.
Yeah, that's what it was. Like, it was, oh, we could save money by getting people who already popping and just put a little more money into it, as opposed to we sign it, we got to try to figure out how to break it. Because I was telling somebody, I said, if you really think about it, when was the last superstar artist, like superstar, that the label has broken? I'll give y'all time to think too. Who y'all think was the last superstar that a label broke?
Taylor Swift, maybe.
Yep. Now, black superstar.
Oh,
black. Who's the last black superstar that a label broke?
Otis Redding? No, I'm just kidding.
I'm gonna tell you, it's gonna mess you up because she ain't new, ain't nowhere. Rihanna.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rihanna was the last black superstar. Like, I ain't talking about just star, just fame. I'm talking about superstar. And I think that comes because she was one of those artists that was still in the era of getting developed. They developed Rihanna for almost 2 years before they dropped that first record.
That was Jay's record label, though, right?
Well, she was Def Jam first.
Oh, okay.
She was Def Jam before she went, because he didn't have Roc Nation yet. It was when he was over.
All right. Because I was gonna say that is more of a business, you know, a business savvy move. So I would just gonna attribute that to Jay, you know, from a business instinct kind of thing. But yeah, she definitely got the full tribute, and look at the payoff, man. I mean, she's still, we're talking about her now.
But because labels don't do that anymore, you're hard pressed to find superstars and sustainable stars.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you think about it, like, even the people who are big now, like the Usher been in the game for over 25 years. But Usher can be that, and even Chris Brown ain't new. You know what I mean? Like, so Chris Brown has even been in the game for over 15 years. And these are like some of the closest you got to a superstar. Because I think Chris Brown is a star. I don't think he's a superstar.
Shit, I've been seeing Chris Brown since I was in elementary. So
yeah,
he's been around for a minute.
So. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. But you go back, that's like the last era of like that boot camp, going through dancing with a choreographer and all that, like,
yeah, acting, to, all that stuff.
Yeah, to where we are now, where you get these artists who drop and you could tell, like that's why you feel like you see a lot of these female artists be like, I'm quitting. After like the first album, like they got hit out and they like, I'm quitting, because then when they get in there and actually have to do the work, have to go through touring and have to do all the rigorous stuff that nobody prepared them for at all. They not mentally prepared for it. They not mentally prepared to be a star. They like, I don't like this. People hitting me on social media talking about me, like, I'm out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think it's hard because of that. It's hard to build a superstar now.
Yeah,
well, you can tell that too, because when people show up for like a radio and stuff like that, and especially now with these podcasts and stuff where they have video, you can see that they have no preparation for media training, unless they've done a bunch of interviews. Like when they go in, like they can be ready to fight and like do other shit that ain't got nothing to do with music and moving your career down the field a little bit. You know, it's like they just come in like. Off the street, you know what I'm saying? Which no disrespect to the street, but I'm just saying that you ain't came in prepared. You don't have no kind of personality to your interview and stuff like that. It's like, I'm a gangster, so I'm in a gang and, you know, I'll kill you and that kind of shit. But like, you know what I'm saying? They don't have anything to offer. It don't even seem like, you know, the interview is set up like to ask key questions to like to loop in your promotional, you
know, statement. Because even that, like I said, you think about that, even that's different now, right? Like there's no Donnie Simpsons, no Sherry Carters who are actually like music journalists anymore, really. It's literally, you know,
but I mean there's stuff like, what's his name, Charlemagne, and you know what I'm saying,
Breakfast Club. But even when you're on a Breakfast Club, a lot of times like they probably talk about your project 8% of the interview.
Yeah.
And the rest is about like, you know, beef or.
Getting to know you. And
like, yeah. But I don't think it's even the same as like.
It's not not back in the day type shit where you always talking about your album and how you created it and where you got the
right.
Shit like that. Like, it's not like that.
Like, you don't get that process talking about, oh, I worked on this album, such produced it. Cause remember, that's what we used to know. Yeah. Oh, he produced this whole album and jumped on it. And I got some songs with blah, 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 blah. Like, those interviews don't go like that no more. It'd be like, oh, who you beefing with? I heard such jumped in your DMs. Yeah,
like a reality show.
Yeah, then at the end, they'd be like, new album in stores now. You like, y'all ain't talked about the album like at all.
Yeah.
So I think it's like, it's been a whole shift in everything. It's been a whole shift in the musical culture. And I don't think that has nothing to do with like, you know, oh, getting old or just want to do stuff like back in the day. Like, no, I think there was a culture shift. And I think that culture shifts has changed the way we absorb music, the way we think about music, and the way we care about music. You know what I mean? Like,
the other thing too, man, is with the instant gratification aspect of today's marketplace, you know what I'm saying? The attention span is harder to hold for, you know, your audience and your listeners and stuff. So, I mean, I can see people trying to be on to the next thing that they got coming and stuff like that, because as soon as a song has been out a week, there's another song from another artist that's got a different story to tell and all that stuff. Excuse me. So I can see where they would put less focus on stuff like that, but I think it's really up to the artist to like make sure. Well, not, and that's probably an aspect that's gone missing like we're talking about right now. But to make sure what the focus and the thrust of the interview is going to be, because you see that sometimes in interviews where people say, "Hey, I'm not here to talk about that. I want to talk about this, you know, my record or da da da. I don't care what like Nicki Minaj posted about me and that my baby's ugly or like, you know what I'm saying, some shit that ain't got nothing to do with the topic." I don't know where I'm going with that, but that's the end of it. Whatever it was.
Donald Brown said, "Random thought, I miss reading the credits on CDs." Bro, that was like a routine for us. Like, we would go warehouse records, buy a bunch of CDs, whatever came out. Records came out on that with the Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And we go buy everything that came out Tuesday, go to the crib, crack them open, and just listen through all of them while we reading the credits. I miss that too.
And if you're lucky, the lyrics on the liner too sometimes. But yeah, that's a bygone element of it, and I was gonna make that analogy that the interviews used to kind of be a synopsis of the CD liner, you know, credits and stuff like that when they would get into the creation of a record. But yeah, all that's gone now.
Stephanie said, "To be honest, it's really sad because between the fans and the so-called journalists, they're all more concerned about your personal life and gossip as opposed to your creative work." And you know what's funny? The people who are still the biggest stars still keep everybody at arm's length like that.
Absolutely. I was
going even to say, with whatever drama you know about Beyonce, you don't know. You still don't even know why her sister fired on Jay-Z on the elevator. We still don't know.
Yeah.
We still, you know what I mean? Like, the real superstars still kind of keep that mysteriousness. I think everybody, they get too common. Like, you get too common jumping on your Instagram live every day, arguing with regular people, arguing in
your panties and shit.
Your panties. Like, I think everybody, a lot of the stars today just got way too comfortable and way too common. Yeah. And I think that, you know, changed everything.
Right. I agree. I think the overexposure kind of helps to propel an artist sometimes, but it's to their own detriment a lot of times too, and it's just too much information, too many details, too many things for people to go after you for and stuff like that they have no business knowing about and stuff. And your girlfriend cheated on you, and now everybody's got something to say about it. And it's like, bro, but my album, it sounds pretty good, huh? I don't know, but you can't keep a woman, so I don't, you know, why would I the R&B, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
this is not what it's supposed to be about. Oh, what's this that the mon says? Come on through.
Yeah, come through to our show, Wild Bunch. We got a show this Sunday. We're going to be at Senator Jones every first Sunday from 4 to 8 p.m. So you come, get your drink on, get your eat on, and be home in time to get yourself together for work the next day. 4 to 8
p.m. Come down and drop your eagle. Come down and get your eagle on. You know what I'm saying?
That's 2020 Wilshire Boulevard.
Yep, 2020 Wilshire Boulevard. Y'all come through and y'all come hang out. We're going to be playing some live music. We're going to take y'all back. We're going to have a good time. Everybody who know Wild Bunch, y'all know how we do. And again, before we get out of here, follow us on all the socials. All right, it's time to wrap up. I thank everybody who's been in the comments, man. It's been great. This is for our first one.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the first Wild Wild Thoughts, and we're going to be back next week. We're going to try to make this a consistent thing and give y'all little tidbits. You know, we got a new album coming out soon, a new video dropping. So we're just going to be giving y'all little tidbits about what we're doing as well. But mainly, we're here to talk about entertainment, hip-hop, the culture, funk music, everything that's going on. So my cousin Rex down there at the bottom, he started, we used to, you know, we all have our little our cigar smoke sessions. And one night he came up with this game. And we're going to add it. It's going to be the last segment of every show, y'all. It's called the Super Duper Group. All right? So what we're going to do is, since Marvin Gaye, you know, we just, I don't want to say celebrated, but we just commemorated the passing of Marvin Gaye April 1st. The first Super Duper Group is going to start with Marvin. So what we want y'all to do in the comments, and what we want V-Ray to do, and Lil Red, what we want y'all to do, we want you to put together a five-man group with only male vocalists from the 70s to be in the group. The 70s to be in the group with Marvin Gaye. Marvin Gaye, you starting out, that's your lead singer. Who you putting in the group with Marvin Gaye? If y'all need time, y'all want me to go first so y'all could kind of
All right, for
the super duper group, we need to add four more to go with Marvin. So this is gonna be my super duper group from the 70s. I'm going to go Marvin Gaye. I'm going to go Felipe Wynn. I'm going to go David Ruffin. Dennis Edwards. And let me round it out with Levi Stubb from the Four Tops.
Damn.
Vocals.
Damn. Vocals.
Vocals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Vocals. Vocals. Yeah.
Vocals.
Let me hear yours, man. I need to hear this. I need to hear this.
Oh, well, let me read this while y'all thinking. Patricia, what up, Patricia? I ain't seen you in a minute. Patricia's a dope vocalist, y'all, too, man. Shout out to Patricia Osborne. She's a great singer. We did like a couple shows with her back in the day. Social media has made great artists, musicians way too accessible. I miss the days when they were a mystery and we only got to know a short quote from the magazine article or, like V-Ray said, an interview about their work. 100%. Okay, Stephanie got a nice little okay, Steph. So Stephanie super duper group is Marvin, Donny Hathaway, Charlie Wilson, James Ingram, and David Ruffin. Some draws gonna be dropping if that's
that was like 70s though.
Yeah, 70s. Yeah.
Charlie Wilson was in the 70s?
Yeah.
James Ingram?
Yeah, for sure. Because James Ingram was all over all the
Quincy Jones.
Quincy record, Jones right? Stuff.
That
yeah.
was, I thought that was the 80s. Okay.
No, that was 70s. Late 70s.
Stephanie's been using Google.
Pandora, she said Marvin Gaye. Oh, this cold. Teddy Pendergrass, Eddie LaVert, David Ruffin, and Philip Bailey. See, she put the group together like a real group, too. I see what you did. She got the high falsetto. She got the tenor. She got the alto. She put them all together. That's a cold group right there. Marvin, Teddy P, Eddie LaVert, Dave Ruffin, and Philip Bailey. Sheesh. All right, let's see what DeMont came up with for his. Right. Marvin, Donny Hathaway, David Ruffin, Stevie Wonder, and Freddie Mercury.
Jesus.
That's a cold group.
Okay.
That's
okay.
cold.
That's a cold.
That's group. Cold.
That's cold. No, that's cold.
That's cold. That's cold.
That's cold. All right,
let's see what Donald Brown came with. Donald Brown said Leroy Hudson. Okay, he digging in the crates on him. If y'all know about Leroy Hudson, go check him out. Sly Stone, Eddie Kendrick, Stevie Wonder, and Philip Bailey. Woo!
That's a good one.
All right. Hey, y'all killing it. Y'all, I don't think nobody missed. Nobody missed yet.
Right, I got one abstract dude though. I got Marvin Gaye, Smokey Robinson, Al Green, Donny Hathaway, and Stevie Wonder. But honorable mention is I don't know the dude's name, but the dude that used to sing the lead for Enchantment. Remember Enchantment, the old group?
Oh wow!
That dude was a killer, man. He was way underrated, but I just don't know his name. But right,
I'm gonna look him up. I'm gonna look him up so we could, you know, we gotta give him his props, man.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. I'm gonna look him up real quick.
And I can't believe nobody said Al Green, but me, but
I know.
Damn,
that's Emmanuel EJ Johnson is the lead singer of Enchantment.
If you listen to some of their songs, man, that dude was he was a beast, man.
That's a good one. Damn.
Yeah, that's a dope singer back in the day.
Hey, y'all had some good groups. I would go see all of them in concert.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see how DeMont's group would make a record, right? With Marvin, Donnie, David, Stevie, and Freddie Mercury.
That's the New Edition. They'd be fighting in the studio and shit.
Because Freddie's like, no, we're going to make this all operatic. And Stevie Wonder's like, I just think it should be 6 minutes of piano before we start.
Yeah, harmonica solo. Right?
Yeah. No. Yeah, Emmanuel Johnson. Hey, man, that was some dope groups. So we're gonna be back next week, and I'm not gonna give y'all a hint of what the next super duper group is. I want y'all to come off the top like y'all did tonight, man. Yeah. That was kind of dope. So everybody, one more time, go follow Wild Bunch on all our social medias, man. Every social media is at Wild Bunch. Go hit us up. And then come to the show Sunday. Come see us in real life. Come rock with us. We're going to get this thing going. We got some really good music coming up for y'all. Stephanie said, that's a Stevie show up at all. we could take that so many ways, and I'm not going to do it because I'm not going to hell tonight.
he on the flight with Lauryn Hill, though.
Yeah, but all right, so we will see y'all next week, man. Thank y'all for joining us on Wild Bunch Presents Wild Wild Thoughts. We are out of here. See y'all soon, and on the way out, just take a listen to one of our new tunes, Stop the World.